Good afternoon and welcome to the AMED Effect podcast, where we discuss the causes and effects of Army medicine opportunities. We have received a lot of great feedback about the podcast. So with that being said, we're going to keep bringing you guests that can provide firsthand information on the Army Medical Department, the Health Profession Scholarship Program, and all the other incentives the U.S. Army offers. Before we jump into episode 5, I need for everybody to do me one quick favor. Like the podcast so you can stay up to date on the latest releases. Leave a comment about the show. Let us know how we're doing, or if you have a question that you would like us to answer during the next episode. Today on the AMED Effect podcast, we have Colonel Katrina Walters, who is currently the Medical Recruiting Brigade Commander. Good afternoon, Colonel Walters. How has your day been treating you so far?
Pretty good. Pretty good. How about you?
Man, pretty good. Not too bad. The weather is starting to feel a lot better out here. So I'm really waiting for the summertime. The cold, I'm not a big fan of the cold, so I'm waiting for the summer to come on in. So it's not too bad. In the month of March, we recognize Women History Month. This year's theme is Women Who Have Made Great Achievements. First off, I'd like to say thank you for your service and everything that you have done to serve our country. Second, are there any women who you would like to speak about or that you would like to bring up and talk about since it's Women History Month?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's been so many women that have had an impact on my career in the Army. Uh-huh. It's hard to narrow it down. You know, we often talk about firsts and the first person to break a ceiling. Mm-hmm. So I did have the honor of meeting Lieutenant General Nadia West, who was the first 3-star African-American general in the Army.
Okay.
She was came on a visit at Fort Hood, now Fort Cavazos, and I was a department chief there, so she toured some of my clinics. And uh-huh. Let me tell you, she's quite an impressive person, really very tall. She's a fellow West Pointer. But she was, I like to joke, she was also the first general I've ever seen who did selfies. So she literally would go around taking selfies of everybody. But, you know, that's kind of the traditional people that you look up to. But I think my mentors have been a lot more informal. So, you know, I think back to when I was in training and, you know, who were the female faculty members in my training program that were an inspiration to me. You know, Colonel Don Uwethal was program director and leading the residency in family medicine. And so she was definitely a mentor to me. I also have several peer mentors, you know, that I often reach out and talk to on a daily basis. Colonel Dana Wynn, who's at the Uniformed Services University, she's my sounding board and my advice, and so really look up to her on a daily basis. There's so many more that I could mention, but, you know, I just think that one of the great things about being in the Army is the opportunities that women have for advancement and leadership. Mm-hmm. And just I'm amazed at leaders of all type, men and women in the Army. But that's just one standout for me that I think, you know, it's just amazing the things that we're able to do. And there's so many women that I look up to.
Now, let's give a round of applause to all of the women who have broken barriers, who have been first in the Army, and so on and so forth. So let's give them a round of applause real quick, you guys. After reading your bio and doing a little bit of research about you, I noticed that you have a very extensive background in the medical field.
A nice way of saying I'm old. Well, I've been around a little bit.
Been around for a little bit. So growing up, mm-hmm. like many others who grew, I grew up in a military family as well, and so did you. Your father, he was in the Navy.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you traveled to various different duty mm-hmm. stations, met a whole lot of different people, friends for a couple of years, mm-hmm. and you have to go meet new friends. For me, I tell people that I am from Kentucky by way of Alabama. Talk about where you're from and what was life like for Colonel Walters growing up.
Yeah, so I just tell people I'm a Navy brat, so I don't claim any particular state. Spent most of my time on the West Coast. My dad was a chief petty officer, enlisted in the Navy. He mm-hmm. was what you call flight engineer on P-3 Orion. So those are planes that have the propellers on the front. They were sub hunters. And okay. So he's the guy that sits between the two pilots. And he used to say, I make sure the pilots don't crash the plane. So so we grew up, I spent some time in elementary school in Hawaii. Actually was lucky enough to do my whole high school career in California. My brother was less lucky. He had to move and go to Washington State afterwards, and then he finished up his high school in Rota, Spain. So definitely moved around a fair amount. I think, you know, I don't know that my childhood was a whole lot different than anybody else's. I mean, definitely we moved around a bit. But to me, I think that's made me a more resilient person in life. I'm able to adapt and overcome change. You get less anxious about new beginnings, you know, and you almost get a little antsy after about 3 years of being in the same job or same location. You want to do the next new great thing. But what probably impacted me the most is just the sense of service and country. And so that was instilled from the beginning. And I think it takes the mystery out, right? So I can understand how people have a hard time joining the Army. Right. They don't have that military experience because there's all these misconceptions and myths.
Right.
For me, it was a natural pathway to achieve my dreams and goals because there was no mystery. I mean, just it had been part of my lifestyle.
Right, yeah, I say that all the time. I tell people I was born into the melting pot. So my father was in the military. Now, for me, I spent most of my time right here at Fort Knox because my father was a tanker. So we were here. That's when the armor division was here. So we didn't move much. Born in Fort Benning. But then, like I said, Fort Knox was majority of the time that we spent was right here. As kids, many of us grow up and we talk about the different things that we would like to be when we get older. At what point in your life did you decide that you wanted to make a career in the U.S. Army?
Yeah, so I was in fifth grade. This is a very clear memory, and my mom tells this story too. So, you know, we have some knowledge in the family on this one. So we had the typical career day, you know, where you're supposed to do this draw an outline of your body and then dress it up in whatever career right. that you wanted to be. And so I put myself in scrubs with a scrub cap. And from that point on, I was going to be a doctor. And there was no change in my mind. And my mom says she worried all the time, like, I don't know if that was a wise thing to decide in fifth grade and then not go back on. But I decided that's what I wanted to do and then started making all of the choices and the exposures that I needed to get done to get into medical school. I was a candy striper at a local maternity ward, helping with the baby photos when I was in high school, and just never looked back.
It started going from there, so yeah. It was already set in stone right then and there.
It was. I made up my mind, and that was how it was going to be.
Now, when you brought the Army home to your parents, did dad try to sway you to the Navy?
Absolutely not. So my dad, again, being enlisted, so he joined the military. He actually had to get his GED and joined the military because he basically because I was part of the family. So my parents were high school sweethearts. I was the oops baby that they ended up getting married over, and you know, thankfully they're still happily married to this day. But my dad had to figure out how to make a living for a new family. And so he joined the Navy as his means to do that. And he always said, my kids are going to have more opportunity than I did. I don't want you to feel like you have to join the military to be successful in life. And so he actually forbid us from joining the military, both my brother and I. He said, you will not join the military. You're going to go to college first. And I remember thinking as I was looking at how am I going to pay for college and medical school, you know, my dad had always said, we'll find a way. Mm-hmm. But I knew that meant we'll find a way meant that my parents might go without, my brother might go without, that, you know, but they would make it happen. But that wasn't the way that I wanted to do it. I wanted to be able to pay my own way. So looked at all the different scholarship opportunities, found ROTC scholarships, and then stumbled onto the academies. And I thought, okay, how am I going to pitch this to my dad? And so I came home and said, I know you said that I couldn't join the military, but what do you think about me applying to the academies and going to college through the military? Uh-huh. And my dad tells me now, he said he had to really control himself because all he wanted to do was scream from the rooftops, hallelujah. But he didn't want to sway my decision. He wanted it to be mine. So he was very neutral and said, well, you need to do your research. You need to find somebody that's gone to the academy and really understand if that's the right fit for you. And so he never swayed me. And actually, I never applied to the Navy.
Okay.
This is a recruiting failure story. So I started looking at the Air Force Academy, the West Point, the Army's Academy, and the Naval Academy. Mm-hmm. And usually there are in your community, there's a liaison, some what we call old grad, somebody that's graduated from the academies who is there to help families and applicants navigate through that process.
Uh-huh.
And so I started talking to the Navy liaison, and it's a terrible story. So he said to me, well, you know, you can't go to medical school straight out of Annapolis. So that's one thing. Which is not true. You absolutely can. I have friends that have done it. And then he said, well, and haven't you ever heard about Tailhook? I would never let any daughter of mine go into the Navy. And I thought, wow, this is a recruiter telling me, you know, who's supposed to be selling me on the best there is right. of the service, and you're telling me to walk away. And so I didn't apply. In retrospect, that's all negative press and not true about the Navy. Mm-hmm. But I applied to both Air Force Academy and West Point. I got into both. Quite frankly, I chose the Army because an ex-boyfriend went to the Air Force Academy and I wanted a clean start. So,
they had to get away from him.
I'm not sure that's what you should base life decisions on, but that's what I based my decision on at the time.
Now, you spoke of the academies, and after high school, and you just talked about applying to the mm-hmm. academy. So after high school, you ended up attending the United States Military Academy in West Point. And this is where you attended college.
Mm-hmm.
To attend the academy, are you required to sign up for the Army for a certain amount of period of time, or how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a kind of a unique process. So you apply to them like you would apply to any other college, but you actually have to apply for what we call a nomination. So
okay.
you have to have a nomination from your congressional leaders or the vice president or the president. There's different levels of nomination in order to be able to apply to the academy. So it's kind of like a pre-admission, if you will. And so that process is a little bit tricky, but you do. You basically join the Army when you go to West Point. You're obligated to 5 years of service after mm-hmm. graduation, a total of eight years of service in what we call the inactive ready reserve, or the IRR. But that's in exchange for 4 years of fully paid for room and board, everything goes, education. And it is one of the premier, institutions of higher education, mm-hmm. definitely for leadership, still one of the top engineering schools in the country. And so for me, it was a good fit because, again, I was looking for ways to pay for college and get myself on the path to medical school, because I wasn't sure at the time if the Army was going to pay for that fully mm-hmm. or if I was going to have to get scholarships or how that would look. So.
And speaking of, you're saying it was an engineering school. It was actually the nation's first engineering school. So when you received the letter, hey, you are accepted, what type of emotions did you feel? What went through your mind at that time?
I was ecstatic. So, the typical, like, all right, is it a thick package or a thin package? I got the thick package. And so I was like, all right, this is a good sign, and opened it. And I just remember being really, really excited because that was my first choice. Once I got that acceptance letter, it didn't really matter what came in the mail after that.
And as I was looking on the website, it stated that more than 80,000 graduates from the academy, they serve in fields of medicine, law, business, politics, and science following their Army career. So I just want to say that it's a pleasure being able to speak with you today about attending the school and what you're currently doing in leadership as well. So I do want to say that. Now, the West Point Academy, they offer 36 different majors. Mm-hmm. When you were applying, you already said you already knew what you wanted to do. But for the people who may not know, can you tell us the path that you chose to take and why were you passionate about that program?
Yeah, so I'm a pragmatist at heart. I really like efficiencies. So for me, I picked life sciences. Mm-hmm. Chemistry, life sciences was the major at the time because that major hit most of the requirements for medical school without having to take extra programs. Now,
uh-huh.
you don't have have to major in biology or chemistry to go to medical school. I had a classmate who majored in philosophy and just took the the handful of prerequisite courses that he needed to apply for medical school. So that worked for him. But for me, I didn't want to take any extra classes that I didn't have to. And at West Point, you have to take an engineering track. So regardless of what your major is, you've got to take 5 classes in an engineering track. And my engineering track was nuclear engineering. So I don't know why I picked that. I think that just it sounded cool. So so I decided to do that.
Right. So jump on the nuclear engineering. Yeah. Learn something new, learn something different.
Absolutely. Challenge myself, I guess.
In 1998, you graduated from the academy and then you commissioned into the Army. Mm-hmm. After commissioning in, what was your first duty location and were you able to land at the location of your choice?
Yeah. So I went one of the lucky that got to go directly to medical school. So while I commissioned as a second lieutenant, then I turned right back around and joined the Uniformed Services University as a second lieutenant for the next 4 years.
Okay.
So that was my first duty location. It was my first choice. Mm-hmm. Only about 2% of the graduating class from West Point is allowed to apply to medical school and go because, again, their primary mission is to create officers for the entire Army and specifically combat arms officers. So that's why that restriction is there. But some of my other classmates, I'll tell you, from West Point went out and did great things. So you may know about Frank Rubio. He now is an astronaut who has the U.S. record, for the longest time in space now. He is one of my West Point classmates, but he graduated and went into another branch and then came back afterwards and did medical school and residency and now is a NASA astronaut.
I think I remember seeing him not too long ago, maybe a few months ago. They were talking about him on social media. They posted him on social media and they had a real big article about him as well. So your classmate.
Yeah, absolutely. And Drew, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Drew Morgan. He's the other astronaut classmate of mine from West Point. He's an emergency medicine physician and we were classmates from both West Point and USIS. So what's wrong with me, right? Like I got 2 classmates going to space.
Well, you're here at Fort Knox, and you're holding it down here at Fort Knox. So that's good too. Now, in 2011, I had the opportunity to go up to Carlisle, Pennsylvania, where my father-in-law he graduated from War College. Mm-hmm. He ended up receiving his master's degree in strategic warfare. So again, as I was doing my research and looking over your biography, you also attended War College and you got your master's in strategic studies. In your opinion, how did the West Point Academy and War College differ from another, if they differ?
They're totally different. So, you know, West Point is college. It's your introduction to Army. Mm-hmm. It's instilling those Army values. It's fairly regimented, you know, lots of rules and things, whereas the Army War College is much more a gentleman's course, if you will. So these are our senior colonels that are, you know, poised to take brigade commands, strategic positions throughout the Army. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, it was nice to just kind of get back to those roots of being in a classroom with folks from all across the Army. So, you know, a lot of times my focus in my career has been very medical related and medical support to the line. This was the opportunity to kind of hear from those infantry soldiers, those aviators, those, you know, all compos. So National Guard, Reserve, there was a lawyer in my class. We had a civilian, a Department of the Army civilian who was there as well. And so just a really great experience to learn from everybody as we study national security and what our piece and portion of it is. Definitely not in my wheelhouse. So that's a humbling experience when you're used to being the smart kid in the room and you go into a room like that and you're like, wow, I have a lot to learn from these folks. But it was a great experience.
Now, taking it back a little bit, because I think I kind of moved a little bit forward, but in 2002, you earned your doctorate of medicine from the Uniformed Service University of Health Science, and then you commissioned in as a captain. What inspired you to pursue a career in medicine, specifically family medicine?
Yeah. So, you know, when you apply to medical school, I think all of us, some people decide what they want to be and that's it and they're done. So while I knew I wanted to be in medicine, I didn't have it right on the specialty of choice. Uh-huh. So when I started medical school, I was convinced that I was going to be an emergency medicine physician because, you know, I was all about taking care of trauma, uh-huh. being ready to take care of soldiers downrange in that sense. I thought I'd like the fast pace, all of that. I hated emergency medicine. What I hated about it was that I was very not satisfied when, you know, you get through your emergency room visit and you say, well, I don't know what you have, but it's not going to kill you tonight. Right. We've rolled out the bad things. Go see your primary care doctor. I really wanted to finish the puzzle. I wanted to know mm-hmm. what was going on and how I could help that patient in front of me. And so I was driven towards primary care. And for a long time, I was trying to decide between family medicine and pediatrics. Really loved taking care of kiddos and their families. Mm-hmm. But ultimately decided I would do family medicine because I could have the full spectrum, you know, and take care of folks from the time they're born all the way until the time that they're contemplating death. And so it's a hugely valuable and adaptable specialty. That's the other thing. Okay. There are the variety of things that family physicians can do in the Army mm-hmm. is so vast that, you know, if you love delivering babies, you can deliver babies. If you hate delivering babies, you don't ever have to deliver babies after residency. So, you know, there's really a niche for almost anyone that wants to do that full scope of family medicine in the Army.
And then after you finished there, you actually did a year fellowship in obstetrics. Yeah. Could you talk about that and how did you end up getting into this year fellowship afterwards?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I started family medicine, I remember my medical school rotation in obstetrics was not fun. So I watched my intern pass out. I spent the whole rotation trying to get a delivery, and it was just a slow month. And so there was just a lot of I didn't think I was going to like obstetrics. And then in my residency, I liked it. It was okay, but, you know, I wasn't convinced that that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to do necessarily.
Right.
But then when I got to my first duty station outside of residency, that was Fort Leonard Wood. And so we call it Fort Lost in the Woods. It is in the middle of Missouri.
It's
about an hour away from Springfield,
yeah.
Small college town. Rolla is about the closest thing to it. And family physicians run that little community hospital.
Oh, okay.
We had one pediatrician, one or two pediatricians, if I can remember correctly, when I was there, one internist, one general surgeon, and the rest is family physicians. And it's a big training post, so the Army has lots of folks that get admitted to the hospital. You take care of them and then their families, of course. And so I distinctly remember delivering a baby or managing a labor in the hospital and being in a situation where we had to call the obstetrician in for an emergency C-section. Mm-hmm. And I did everything that I could as a family physician, rolled the patient back, you know, was standing there ready to assist with the C-section and just listening to the baby's heartbeat kind of go down, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was this just moment of panic that I said, if I'm going to do this, I have to be able to do the whole spectrum of it. I got to be able to get these babies out because this is a terrible feeling for me, this family, this baby. Thankfully, everything turned out fine with that. The OB came in, did the emergency C-section. The baby was fine. But that was the moment that I said, you know what, I really want to get more training. And so I did a year, applied for a fellowship. The Army allows – at the time, they didn't have any Army fellowships, so you couldn't be trained to do that in the Army.
Uh-huh.
And so I went to a civilian program at Swedish Hospital in Seattle
okay.
and received training to be able to do C-sections there. And so and then had the distinct pleasure a few years later of starting the Army's FMOV program and being able to teach that. So some really great times.
And so I know about Fort Leonard Wood. My wife is actually from Lebanon. So it's Fort Leonard, then you got Lebanon, then you got Springfield.
Yeah, then Springfield, yep.
So, yeah, so we go, we visit that area often, yeah. So that's pretty good. Before we continue, we're going to take a quick little break. If you guys would like to know more about the Health Profession Scholarship Program, take a listen to this here. You all, this portion of the podcast is sponsored by the Health Profession Scholarship Program.
Launch your medical career with zero to little debt with the Army's Health Professions Scholarship Program. HPSP is one of the most comprehensive scholarships available in the healthcare field. The health profession scholarship could be great for those pursuing a career in one of these fields: medical, including osteopathy, dental, veterinary, nursing, counseling and clinical psychology, and optometry. For more information, visit goarmy.com/HPSP.
Welcome back to the AMET Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Will Cunningham, and we're going to get more into Colonel Walter's Army story and her experience in medicine. AMED offers training and residencies in locations across the country and the world. Hawaii is a beautiful place, and it's home to Tripler Army Medical Center. In 2005, you had the opportunity to complete your residency at Tripler. Talk about your experience there during the training, and was Tripler your top choice when you decided you would picking residency schools?
Of course. Isn't it everybody's top choice? No. Actually, so I had, believe it or not, I had zero desire to be in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah?
When I was originally looking at residency programs, being overseas, away from family sometimes, because even though that's still in the United States, it is overseas. It's expensive plane ticket for family to come visit you.
Uh-huh.
But my husband was in the military at the time, okay. And he got assigned and stationed to Hawaii during my the end of my third year of medical school. And so I did some rotations, what we call interview rotations, in my fourth year, trying to get into the same location as him. We used to joke we had a National Guard marriage. We'd see each other, 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year while I was in medical school, because he was stationed elsewhere. So that was my primary driver, honestly, was trying to get to obviously a good training program, but closer to him. And so,
right.
Yes, I ended up there in Hawaii.
Okay. And you said not really too much of a desire. Now, when you got there, did you end up liking?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. The reason I say it wasn't a desire, again, was just being separated from family. Because
right.
at the time, my family was in the Kansas City, Missouri
okay.
area. And they had just adopted my little sister. Her name is Kara, mm-hmm. Kara Aker. And so she was adopted, and, it's a cute little girl. I wanted to know her and get to know her. And so it was going to be tough for her to be able to meet her out in Hawaii.
Right.
But no, of course it was Hawaii. It was great. So, it's a big medical center. They have lots of different training programs in the Army. When I did have some time off from residency, I was able to enjoy it on the beach.
Right. Yeah. Definitely can't beat that.
Yeah.
Definitely can't beat that. Talk about some of the other unique residency training locations that the Army mm-hmm. provides for medical professionals.
Yeah. We have training programs all over. I think we're up to like 19 different graduate medical education sites or locations. And so it really is very individual based. One of the reasons that originally I wasn't looking at Hawaii was because, again, I mentioned it's a big, large medical center. So there were multiple training programs. And as a family physician, there's sort of two schools of camp. You can go to a big, busy MTF or military treatment facility where there are lots of other residents that are training, because you have lots of invested faculty, or you can go to a community hospital-like location where you're the only resident that the faculty are concentrating on. You don't have to compete for cases. And so originally I was in the camp of, let me go to a community hospital and get the best training that I can. And certainly we have fantastic graduate medical education programs in both of those types of locations. I think the Navy often will try to outcompete us by saying, hey, look at, we're on coastal regions. We've got lots of beautiful places like San Diego, and I say, yeah, well, we've got Hawaii. We've got Joint Base Lewis McChord in Madigan in Washington, which is gorgeous in the Pacific Northwest. We've got lots of locations, Walter Reed on the East Coast is another big mecca that I think most people are familiar with.
Right, yeah.
And then we have lots of locations all throughout the country that each graduate medical education program has its strengths.
Okay. Now, you are currently the Medical Recruiting Brigade Commander, and that covers the Army Medical Department. The AMED department offers scholarship opportunities and incentives to students, such as your health profession scholarship program, your specialized training assistance program, or what we call STRAP, And the Health Professions Loan Repayment Program. And I want to also include FAP as well. Can you share with us some information about the Army's HPSP program and what exactly it does for medical students?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously that's one of our biggest missions, is to get out there and try to offer these scholarships to high quality potential medical students. Uh-huh. And so, you know, really what it is it's an incentive and opportunity to have medical school paid for, to receive a monthly stipend in addition to that while you're attending medical school, and as well a sign-on bonus, so a little bit of cash in your pocket to get you started on your journey for medical school. And that's in exchange for active duty, what we call an active duty service obligation, after you complete medical school. It also is a guaranteed seat into our graduate medical education programs, which are amongst the best in the country.
Okay.
When you look at our first-time board pass rate, so in other words, when you're finishing your residency and you're looking to become board certified, mm-hmm. We have a much higher average rate of first-time pass rates than when you compare to other civilian programs across the country. And so to me, that's really the win is you've got that direct line into that graduate medical education training pipeline. And then you get the opportunity to serve your country for a few years while you're, if you will, paying it back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you heard about all of the things that I took advantage of: West Point, the Uniformed Services University, and a civilian fellowship. I also took a retention bonus to put my husband through graduate school when we were in Washington. And so I joke that I'm still paying off my active duty service obligation at 22 years in service, but that was all my choice, and the Army has paid for every single minute of it.
Okay.
And so I've taken every opportunity the Army was going to be willing to give me.
Now, with your background in the medical field, were you able to take advantage of the Health Professions Scholarship Program?
Yeah, so the Health Professions Scholarship Program is an option that's a little different than the Uniformed Services University.
Okay.
So that I took the Uniformed Services University opportunity, which meant that, again, I got a full ride. I was paid mm-hmm. a salary as a second lieutenant for my 4 years in medical school. And then that translated into a seven-year active duty service obligation. The HPSP program allows you to go to any medical school in the country, mm-hmm. And if you take the four-year option, essentially you do that at any civilian medical school. You're not on active duty. You're not wearing a uniform. You know, your pay is a little different than it is at USU, but you know, that incurs a four-year service obligation.
Okay.
At the end of it. And so a little shorter obligation, a little less pay while you're in there, mm-hmm. And just a little bit different. But for me, it was an easy choice because I had already made the choice going to West Point that I was going to put a career in the Army and in Army medicine. And
right.
So, you know, the extra years didn't really matter. It just gets me closer to retirement.
Scholarship opportunities, they come with criteria to be eligible to apply. Can you tell us what the eligibility requirements are for HPSP?
Yeah, so we're looking for folks that can successfully get accepted into medical school.
Okay.
And so generally we're looking for, you know, folks that have met those class criteria, that have high GPAs and high MCAT scores, that are able to come and join our team. But, you know, I'll leave the specifics for our recruiters to link folks to, and you can certainly find that information on some of our websites. You know, the key is do you have – it's about more than the incentive. And so I really mm-hmm. challenge folks to say, you know, there's lots of opportunities out there for scholarships for medical school these
right.
days. There's lots of opportunities for loan repayment and those kinds of opportunities. Really, we need to be having the conversations about what does it mean to join the Army and have a career of service, or even just a few years of service in the Army, mm-hmm. and what are the things that Army medicine can – bring to the table, or that you can bring to the table for Army medicine that's going to provide value to you and help you along your way.
Now, so you guys, you heard that directly from Colonel Walters. If you are looking, or if you are a medical student and you're looking for a way to pay for your college tuition, visit goarmy.com/HPSP And you can find out some more information. You can speak to one of our digital recruiters. Just fill out the information and they will be able to get back with you. If you want to learn more about the Army Medical Department, visit www.goarmy.com/AMED. And you can find out some more information about the Army Medical Department from there. March 15th is match day. Match day is a big thing. You see it. I know we have military match day, and then the colleges and universities, they have match day as well. Talk about match day and why you all highlight match day, or highlight those individuals who match to a particular residency.
Yeah, it's a next milestone in your career, right? So medical students, when they start medical school, they have the white coat ceremony. And it's that visual donning of the white coat to say, hey, I'm going to make it here, you know. And then certainly we celebrate folks at graduation time at medical school. But the match is just that, is you're declaring what residency program you're going to go into and what residency program you've matched. So you've interviewed and they've said, we want to train you. This is what you're going to be when you grow up, you know. So you're going to be the family physician or the emergency medicine doctor or the general surgeon. And so it's a big deal because it's what your identity is going to be in medicine. In the Army, we do our match earlier than they do on the civilian sector. Uh-huh. So we match in December.
Okay.
And that's another advantage to joining our team and taking that HPSP scholarship. You get to find out what you're going to do sooner. And then in March is when the civilian match happens. And so we just like to celebrate all of those medical students are out there, you know, deciding what they're going to be. And what they're going to train to do when they come out of residency.
So match day is coming up. We can't wait to see what you all have coming up. Can't wait to see where you all are going and what the future holds for you all. AMED offers training in residencies and locations across the country and the world. What are some residency locations, and is it harder to get in one than another?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the myths that we're challenged with, is that, you know, somehow people think that if I join the military, I'm going to have a lack of control. Mm-hmm. The Army's going to decide what my specialty is, and they're going to tell me where to go. And that's just not true. I mean, we have similar processes that you do on the civilian side in terms of interviewing, doing rotations in those programs so that folks get to know you, and then really trying to decide, is this a good fit for me? And so I think overall, most people are pretty satisfied. And year to year, we have different data that shows the number of folks that got their top one or two residency programs in the match. We do a fairly good job of matching residents to where they want to be. Now, I always tell people, you know, if you want to be that neurosurgeon and you're trying to match to a residency program that, you know, typically takes the top 10% of medical students and you're in the bottom 10% of your class, well, then you may need a new dream, right? Like, I can't sing. I'm not going to be on American Idol. If my dream was to be an American Idol, I need a new dream, because I just didn't set myself up for success in that realm. And so certainly that's a case. But if you have a realistic desire to match in a residency program and you're doing your homework and getting out there and interviewing, I think you have a pretty decent chance of matching where you want to match. And like we talked before, we have locations all over the place for all types of residencies. And so I think just really great, great programs.
The Specialized Training Assistance Program, or STRAP, the Financial Assistance Program, or what we call FAP, and the Health Professions Loan Repayment Programs are also offered. Can you talk about these programs and what makes them beneficial as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the HPSP scholarship is offered to medical students in their first or second years in medical school to help them pay while they're attending medical school. The FAP and STRAP programs allow us to identify folks in residency who are interested in joining the Army upon completion of their residency. Okay. And it provides some incentives to them while they're in residency to help, you know, subsidize their income.
Okay. Not bad at all. So these are all things that people can take advantage of at a certain, just probably depending on where they are within their career, right?
Absolutely. What I would say is that, you know, no matter what your circumstance, if you think a career in the Army, or even again, just a term of service in the Army, a few years in the Army, is something that you want to try on, there's probably some incentive that we could find that would help you in terms of either, like you said, loan repayment or a stipend or a sign-on bonus of some type. It's really very individualized, and why I say, you know, if you're at all interested, reach out and let us connect you to a recruiter, because they can really help you find out if the Army is the right fit.
Other than physicians, what other medical professionals is the Army seeking to fill through this scholarship?
Yeah, if you can dream it, we have it probably. So we have, I think, over 98 different what we call AOCs, or areas of concentration. That's that's specialties. So we recruit physicians, we recruit dentists, we recruit nurses, we recruit physical therapists, occupational therapists, dietitians, social workers, clinical psychologists, like I said, you name it, entomologists, you know, nuclear science officers. Like I said, if it touches the field of medicine, we likely have a pathway for you to join us.
Okay, that's great. That's great to hear. So students, you guys can, like I said earlier, just make sure you visit the website. The website should have all of the different AOCs on there and what the requirements are too, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Throughout your career, you've had many different assignments where you've played various different roles. A few of your past assignments include Deputy Commander for Clinical Services at Weed Army Community Hospital, Department Chair, Department of Family and Community Medicine for the Carl R. Darnell Army Medical Center, and Officer in Charge at the Evans Family Medicine Clinic. What duty stations have you enjoyed the most, and why?
Yeah, that's a tough question for me. So you know, if I de-Army-ize some of that speak, what that means is that, you know, I was able to do full service family medicine at places like Fort Leonard Wood and at Fort Carson in Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was able to be faculty, teaching residents when I was at Fort Hood, a department chair, which I think most people, that translates pretty well. So I was in charge of a department of 10 clinics, you know, with a residency program underneath. The DCCS position at Weed Army Community Hospital, that was basically a chief medical officer position. Mm-hmm. I've been able to do so much. It's really fun. That's one of the great advantages of the Army, is my job never gets stale. I'm always doing something new and different. And if I get a little bored or a little tired with it, it's time to move in the Army and I get to do something else. And so, to me, that's really been exciting about the Army, is that I've been able to learn and grow and do new things in ways that I never imagined I would do when I started on this journey so long ago. But I would have to say my favorite locations in the Army are probably the ones that nobody wants to go to. So the Fort Leonard Woods and the Fort Irwins of the world. So Weed Army Community Hospital is located in the middle of the Mojave Desert at Fort Irwin, California. We like to joke when we were there, we're in the middle of everything. You just got to drive 3 hours to get there. So 3 hours to Disneyland, 3 hours to San Diego, you know, wherever you're at. But I really enjoy those locations because, again, as a family physician, I get to rise to my highest potential, because those are community hospitals. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have all of the resources that you have maybe in the cutting edge Walter Reed Medical Center. You know, you've got to really be able to figure out, what can I manage here? What needs to go elsewhere? Mm-hmm. You know, you build those relationships and you have a real sense of community in places like that. So those have been my favorites.
Fort Irwin, my dad was there right before I was born, and they left from there and then went to Benning, which is now Fort Moore, which is where I was born. So he did spend a little bit of time out there in the desert.
Yeah, if you've ever made that drive, they call it the Army's longest cul-de-sac, because you come off the highway and you drive, you know, for like 45 minutes down into the middle of the desert where Fort Irwin is. It's crazy. Yeah.
For part of your career, well, to be exact, from 2006 to 2008, you were assigned to the 2nd Brigade Support Battalion as a consolidated aid station during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Was this your first time in a deployed setting, and how did it differ from your hospital, a regular hospital setting?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this is what traditionally people think about Army medicine, you know, and they worry about this. So This was, you know, at the height of the war and during the surge. So actually spent 15 months downrange. It was supposed to be a 12-month deployment. We got extended while we were there.
Okay.
And I was a battalion surgeon, was the job title, which basically means I was assigned to a battalion element. And lucky enough to be located on an aid station where we had several medical units and several battalions. So that's why it's a consolidated aid station. We were able to have, I think, we had about three docs and about four PAs or physician assistants that were able to help take care of patients while we were in that setting. That was my first deployment. That has been my only deployment, luckily, in my career. And I will tell you that, you know, if anybody tells you deploying is easy, they're lying to you, right? I mean, that's hard. That's hard stuff. And as a family physician, you know, I don't take care of gunshot wounds and amputations on a daily basis. And so absolutely I had to stretch outside of my skill set. I'll tell you, the training that you get in the Army prepares you as best it can for those kinds of situations. And the friendships that I made and the people that I worked with and served with during that deployment, that's my why. That's why I get out of bed every single day. That's why I come to work doing what I do. That's why it's so important to me to bring people into the Army. It's because those service members, those men and women who are putting their life on the line to defend this country, they deserve the best in medical care. And those medics that take care of them from the point of injury to those and then bring them back to the aid station, those people are amazing. Let me just tell you that medics are the unsung heroes in the United States Army. And those are enlisted personnel, combat medics, EMTs essentially, that save lives day in and day out. And so to have the privilege to be able to train those medics, give them the skill set they needed, knowing that if something happened to me, they could get me to where I needed to be. Like I said, that's my why. And so that's what keeps me in each and every day. That's why I keep crazily signing on for more education and more incentives and more time in service. That just cannot be beat. And the, you know, some of the physicians and the team that I deployed with, they're still some of my best friends. So, you know, Deanna Settlemeyer was the one brigade nurse that deployed with me, and we're lifelong friends. You know, she's in Texas, and Colonel Josh Will just retired recently. He was the other family physician in the area, and we kept up throughout our entire career despite never really being, you know, assigned to the same locations. But those are the bonds that you just form, and you're part of something bigger than yourself. And to, you know, have those folks alongside of you for a whole career is just something that I can't speak enough to.
Right. Let's give a round of applause to our combat medics and Colonel Walters peers, who she are battle buddies, who she was with while she was in deploy setting. Proper pepper. I'm gonna get tongue tied on this, but proper preparation prevents poor performance. How did you mentally prepare for your tour in Iraq, and what advice would you give your younger self and others today who may deploy?
I heard that a little differently, usually. Poor performance. I like how you changed that. But, luckily or not luckily, I guess, when I deployed, everybody was deploying. So my husband had actually deployed before. And so he was a Chemical Corps officer and deployed downrange as a HHC commander in an aviation unit. So I took a lot of tips from him. He set me up for success in terms of, you know, what do you pack and what's it going to be like down there? You know, am I going to be able to call you or get you on, you know, am I going to be able to email? What are facilities like? So all of those questions were answered in real time by folks that were around me. But I would say that, you know, the biggest concern you have as a medical provider is am I going to have the skills that I need and the tools that I need to be able to do my job and save lives in the time? And so, you know, the best advice I ever got and something that I would give to anybody who was in a similar situation is you got to know the unit that you're deploying with. And so we used to have a system called PROFIS. It's now called MAP. But the bottom line is you get assigned as a doc in a hospital, you get assigned to a unit that may deploy. And so I was working out of Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri in the hospital, but I was PROFIS to the unit that was out of Fort Carson. And so when that unit went to the field, they did their National Training Center rotation at Fort Irwin. That's when I joined up and got to meet the team understands, get a little bit of an assessment of the skills of those medics. Again, that unit had previously deployed out of Korea, and so we had some very skilled medics with some real-life experience that I could learn from. But really just understanding who are you deploying with and what are their capabilities so that you can understand where you fit in the big picture.
You guys, another commercial break before we return back to this episode with Colonel Walters.
Since 1775, Army chaplains have acted as spiritual counselors who support, motivate, and provide emotional guidance to soldiers and their families. We are looking for chaplains to care for spiritual, moral, and emotional well-being of the Army. Follow your calling as an Army chaplain. Visit goarmy.com/chaplain for more information or to speak with one of our virtual recruiters today.
Welcome back to the Amen Effect. Last year, I had the opportunity to attend Global Medics. So I did have, I did go out and I seen the field hospitals and how everything would go as they would prepare and train those professionals to come out and do their job in a deploy setting. Would you say that that's how it is? And has the Army and the medical department been able to expand a lot more on how they provide that care in a deploy in the field setting?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, maybe I'm biased, but I would put Army medicine ahead of just about anybody for providing quality care in austere environments. So, you know, I think people think about what they see on TV, you know, it's like MASH. It is not. So let me just tell you, we have cutting edge technology that we're able to incorporate in the craziest of places, you know, whether we're talking in the middle of the desert, like where I deployed, jungle settings, you know, northern Arctic environments, and we're continually looking to push and advance technology in all areas, you know. So that's one of the great things about Army medicine is that we are innovators in our field. We provide a lot of the cutting edge technology, procedures, that the rest of the country, quite frankly, then sometimes learns from us and adapts. You know, I talk about the use of tourniquets. That's fairly dated now, but, you know, tourniquets used to be sort of a measure of last resort. And then the Army deployed tourniquets in a way to save lives, you know, as an initial way to stop bleeding. And now civilian trauma does the same. So, you know, we're able to again, advance and bring cutting technology. You know, the Army is doing things now by looking at how are we going to get blood products, you know, farther forward, faster, in a way that they can be utilized without needing cold storage. You know, is there a way for technology to be able to do this? How do we deliver things in a contested environment? Meaning, you know, if everybody is getting shot at and things are falling out of the sky, how do we get supplies and equipment to the combat medic on the ground? And so all of those things are things that researchers and Army medicine is actively involved in now. You know, you talk about COVID response, you know, Operation Warp Speed, we had Army medicine involved in that heavily. You know, we deployed, as part of the pandemic response, we deployed Army physicians, nurses, nurse anesthetists, you know, into civilian hospitals to help augment systems. We'd never done that before, right? But that's the whole, I guess that's the whole thing about Army medicine is that we are trained to be adaptable, flexible, innovate, learn, you know, and move forward. And so we're constantly doing that in every way you can think of.
That's great. That's definitely great to see the Army being pretty much at the forefront of all of these new advancements and technology. So definitely another round of applause for the Army for everything that they're doing with the advancement of medicine as well. You are currently the commander of the medical recruiting brigade. What does a day in the office look like for you, and what is the overall mission for the Medical Recruiting Brigade?
Yeah, you know, so I'm almost 18 months in. I wish I had a typical day in the office. Well, you know, so we are charged with you know, connecting with the American people to help folks decide that they want to join the Army, and Army medicine in particular.
Right.
We also have a chaplain mission. If I don't mention that, I'm not doing my job. So we also, you know, recruit chaplains to bring them on board. Specifically, we're bringing officers in, so that's a little different. You know, if you want to be a combat medic, bless your heart. You know, we absolutely need you. That's not the mission of this brigade. We would hook you up with an enlisted recruiter to be able to do that. But so for officer sessions, that's really our mission. And it is a tough mission, right? So, you know, in a national healthcare shortage where we're predicted to have 30,000 plus a physician deficit by 2030, it's a competitive environment out there. All kinds of people are trying to snatch up that talent and bring it on board. And so, you know, when you look at things like pay, it's tough. That's a tough sell, you know, to say, hey, the Army's going to pay you what you can get on the civilian sector. There's probably somewhere out there that's going to be willing to pay you more. So for us, it's really about, again, connecting that story and the other intangible benefits of service. We're gonna try and pay you nicely to do it, but you know, that's the job of our recruiters on the ground, is find folks that are in the healthcare industry or thinking about being in the healthcare industry, and then talk to you about what's your why, what makes you tick, what's your career path, your goals, your dreams. You know, what do you want to do in life, and can the Army be part of that or not? And so it's a really individualized decision. And so that's the tough job that our recruiters have to do out there. But I would just tell you, it's not all about incentives. There's so much more, and that's really where we've got to get to in our conversations.
And then, and not to speak on, I know you said not a lot of incentives are not just about the incentives, but sometimes it makes me think about the non-cash benefits, like the things that are offered, you know, upon retirement, still being able the benefits, your family members being able to, or well, your spouse being able to utilize the facilities on post and so on and so forth. So those are things to think about too. I would say if the pay is not something that may not match up to something in the civilian world, you should think about those things after retirement and all of those benefits afterwards. I think I might be saying that wrong, but
no, absolutely. I mean, I think and most people that are going into medical school, certainly most practicing physicians, you know, they've looked at the financial piece, and so when we look at you know, financial debt, if you will, what national studies are showing right now is that despite the rising cost of medical school, the average amount of debt that a person is willing to take on has been fairly stable at about $200K. That means that we have lots of other scholarship opportunities that are augmenting that, or people are figuring out a way to pay for it. But the bottom line is that level of debt is acceptable to most medical students because they see, when I come out of residency, I'm going to be able to pay this off pretty quickly. And so, again, yes, we have incentives. Yes, we can make it financially available and profitable for you to join the Army, but it's about so much more. You know, you talked about intangible benefits like being able to utilize the facilities on post or the commissary or whatever the case may be. Even that, if you're just looking at that from a monetary standpoint, you may be able to convince yourself that, hey, this isn't for me. But you know, just think about what a military post is. It's a community.
Yes.
It's that melting pot that you mentioned, where folks come together and, you know, you may not know a thing about your neighbor, but you know that they're from a military background. So you know a little bit about their lifestyle, what it's been like. And you have those instant conversation starters, right? You want to talk about, you know, just going to a youth sports game on post, right? And it's like all the parents there are from the military or have been part of the military. All those kids are going through that same experience of moving, you know, every 3 to 5 years or so. And so they all have that instant bond. And I think, you know, even folks that only spent a couple years in the military, that's something that they talk about. That's what veterans talk about. It's that community, that sense of purpose, that value. And so that, you can't put a price tag on that, right?
You're right about that. A lot of my friends, lifelong friends, all military background. Parents were in military, are in the area because their father or their mother retired from the military. So I always loved growing up into that whole military environment. It just exposed me and others to just a whole bunch of different cultures, lifestyles, and just how people do things. So I feel as if it also made us a lot more well-rounded.
Yeah.
When we left, when we went out to, you know, became grown and went to college and doing all these different things, we were just able to adapt to those different situations because we had to pick up and leave. A couple of years, we're here in Germany. We're back here at Fort Knox. We're there. We're here. So I really did. I still enjoy the whole military thing, coming on to post and everything about it.
Well, and like you said, you're exposed to so many differing viewpoints and, you know, people from all across the country. Sometimes we joke, my husband and I, we'll go home. You know, I told you I'm Navy brat, so home for me is wherever my parents are at the time. But they've been in the Kansas City area for some time, and his family's from a small town in Pennsylvania. And we go home, and, you know, sometimes I feel like we visit those small hometowns where people have grown up their whole life, and I just think, gosh, sometimes people seem a little narrow-minded here, or they just don't have the same experiences, right? Or, you know, I remember my roommate at West Point, you know, she did not come from a military background, and, you know, she'd never met anybody from outside the state of Pennsylvania until she went to college, you know? And I was like, are you kidding me? That's unbelievable to me. So just, again, you can't put value on that type of exposure and experience.
No, I agree with that 100%. How would you say Army medicine sets itself apart from other healthcare systems?
Yeah, you know, so Army medicine is absolutely dedicated to quality care. So, you know, you can, and transparency. So you can go, there are websites that look at all of the different quality of care indicators. We do fairly well against most of the big hitters, right? The Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic. When you look at quality indicators, you know, complication rates from surgeries, all of those kinds of things, we do fairly well in that arena. And so I think, you know, in terms of what you think of as a bread and butter hospital setting, we have those. We have those brand new hospitals that with cutting edge technology and that typical scenario. But we have so much more, right? So you heard me talk about how we do it better, I think, than anybody else in an austere environment in that deployed setting.
Uh-huh.
Army medicine has just phenomenal ability to save lives. And you can look at our track record in any of the armed conflicts that we've been in to see that that is the truth. But then we have opportunities to do great things like, you know, so again, as a family physician, prevention is near and dear to my heart. You know, we've got folks that are out there doing unique things that are advising commanders on how to prevent injuries, how to, you know, the Army allows us to integrate things. And I'm sure you talked about this when Colonel Remillard was here, you know, about the H2F program and how we're bringing holistic health and fitness to soldiers in their workplace, right, to be able to optimize performance. Army does that. Army medicine does that, right? So, and then, you know, let's say you end up like myself where you start to feel that maybe you can have some impact in the leadership lane, less clinical. There are so many opportunities for physicians to do things that are not typical in the civilian sector. I mean, I'm a brigade commander of a recruiting brigade, for goodness sakes. Like, nobody trained me how to do that, right? But the Army gave me the skills to be able to do leadership and to be able to take on that role and feel confident in being able to do that. And so I think no matter what your path is, flight surgeons, right? So you want to come out and you want to, get in a helicopter and fly and take care of the people that fly those helicopters. Mm-hmm. You can do that in the Army, you know? So there are just the range of opportunities is so vast that really, if you can dream it, it probably exists in the Army.
And it's funny that you say that. I was up at a training in Michigan with one of our recruiting stations, and they brought a couple of students in, and one of the students, that's exactly what she wanted to do. So she was there to speak to one of the recruiters because she wanted to fly the helicopters or the airplanes that did everything. So it's definitely a field in there for that. So she spoke to him and got some information about it.
Goes back to Frank Rubio, right? Now he's flying in space. So, you know, and he's a physician, family physician. So
exactly. What opportunities for career advancement are available within Army healthcare, and how can Army medical professionals take advantage of them?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sitting to you here as a colonel, Fulbert Colonel, right?
Yeah.
So obviously the Army's been good to me in terms of promotion and advancement. You know, I would say it really just depends on what you want to do, right? So if you want to be in clinical medicine and you only ever want to serve in a hospital, you have that opportunity. Now, will you be a general officer wearing a star on your chest at the end of the day doing that pathway? Probably not, but you can be satisfied in your career and you'll be promoted. You know, definitely promoted all the way up to 05, if not 06 level, or you know, lieutenant colonel or colonel. So I just, there's so many pathways that really, I don't think that there are limits or boundaries. I've never felt constrained in the Army in terms of a promotion based on what I want to do and what I want to, what opportunities that I want to take advantage of. Now, you know, if you want to be a super specialized surgeon, you know, with cutting edge technology on this one little thing, you know, then maybe the Army won't have all of those opportunities. And at some point you'll decide that you've got to go into the civilian sector to be able to maximize your potential. And that's okay, right? There are people who come with us, train with us, do their time, and then go out into the civilian sector, or they're in the reserves, so they're doing both at the same time. There's really just so many different opportunities that, you know, I tell people, just tell us what you want to do, what your career goals are, and we'll let you know if the Army can help you do it or not.
You spoke about cutting edge technology, which brought to my mind the Army medicine experience. What is the Army medicine experience, and how often do you all host this event?
Yeah, so we did Army Medicine Experience last year, and it was basically, it's a showcase of Army medicine, both in the clinical setting, in the research setting, and in that field environment, if you will. And so it was designed to expose what we call centers of influence, or those influencers, right, that talk to medical students. So pre-health advisors, deans of medical schools, you know, potentially CMOs of hospitals, those types of personnel to come and just see what Army medicine is about. And you know, we had Miss Deidre Campbell from Johns Hopkins. She's the best example of kind of who we're trying to get after. So she's a pre-health advisor there, and she, in her own words, told a story about how she had this preconceived notion that if she had students come to the Army, they would somehow be, you know, institutionalized, or she was sending them to jail. They wouldn't have any decisions, right? And so just showing her what Army medicine actually looks like, you know, she did a 180, and now she's opening doors for us, bringing students to us, saying, you need to think about the Army because of all of the opportunities that are available. And I think we took them through several facilities there, Joint Base San Antonio. So Brook Army Medical Center is definitely one of our premier medical centers. We had the Institute for Surgical Research there, Center for the Intrepid. So all of these things that really are cutting edge facilities that showcases the work that Army Medicine is doing.
The Center for the Intrepid is an amazing rehabilitation facility. Would this facility be considered one of the Army's advanced medical facilities, and why?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I'm not going to do it justice because that's certainly not my area of expertise. Okay. But, you know, this is the location that has done so much research on, you know, prosthetic limbs, limb replacement, you know, just the best I can do is describe one of the things that we saw in the Center for Intrepid. So they have this like geodome, virtual reality geodome that you can sit in or that they bring patients into. And it helps to test and adjust their equilibrium. And it's just, I can't do it justice with my description of it, but, you know, I would just tell you that the clinicians and the researchers that work at the Center for Intrepid, they are absolutely dedicated to getting amputees back to 100% of their potential, and they do amazing work, honestly.
Now, other than the feedback from the lady from Johns Hopkins, what other feedback did you get from some of those influencers and VIPs that you all brought in?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody was impressed. You know, again, her testimony is the most stark. But I think it speaks to the barriers, right, that are out there, because there's a lot of folks that don't want to even consider or talk to Army medicine because there still is a misperception that you have a lack of autonomy, that you don't have choices, that, you know, you're gonna be barked at like you know, you see in the movies with the drill sergeant yelling at you, right? And that's I mean, yes, we are an organization that we follow orders, and you will have a boss that you have to, you know, do what that person assigns to you for work. But, you know, we're an organization of human beings, right?
Right,
and that's at the end of the day what I think is most important. So really it was just, I think a lot of people had misperceptions of what Army medicine looked like. And, you know, to see a state-of-the-art hospital that, you know, in a lot of ways was better than some of the hospitals that they were currently working in was eye-opening to them. I think they thought, wow, you know, you must have run-down government-like facilities, and that's not the case at all. We really do have some of the best facilities that are out there.
And their burn facility that they have there is nice as well. Do they also offer care to people who are outside of the military as well?
Yeah, so Joint Base San Antonio has an agreement with the city of San Antonio. They provide care, and I'm, again, not sure of all of the specifics, but they do provide civilian trauma care in that facility. It helps our providers stay ready and see the caseload that they need to see, but it also helps the city of San Antonio in terms of taking care of those patients.
Yeah, that's great. Recently, the media has reported that the United States is struggling to meet its recruiting mission. What would be one thing that you would share with someone who is contemplating joining the Army Medical Team?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to sound like a brokered record here, but, you know, for me, it comes down to three things. So number one, there is no better There's no more deserving population in my mind than the soldiers that we treat, right? Mm-hmm. Again, those are the folks that are willing to put their life on the line to defend our freedoms. And so if I can take care of them in any way, shape, or form, to me, that's very rewarding. Two, it's community. It's all of those people that I've had the chance and opportunity to meet who've made me a better person throughout my time. It's that instant bond that I have with any veteran out there. It is its own culture, its own entity, and I love being part of that. And then lastly, it's just the amazing opportunities that are available. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you heard my story and all of the opportunities that the Army has given me. I've never for one day been bored with what I was doing. You know, I've always had a new opportunity. If I wasn't liking the job that I was in, I knew that, hey, in 3 years, I'm going to go into a different job and it'll be okay, you know.
Right.
And I was able to pick and choose what was best for me and my family along the way and make it work. You know, did I always get the assignment that I wanted? No. But did I always enjoy the assignments that I got in the end? Most of the time, yes. And so I think just, again, that ability to have such an array of opportunities available to you to advance in your career is really, at the end of the day, those are my three reasons for staying.
Good three. No, not bad at all. Perfect three reasons to stay on board. Now, is the Army looking to hire or recruit new medical professionals?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, like I mentioned before, we've got 98 different areas of concentration or specialties that we're recruiting for. We're recruiting in both the regular Army and the Army Reserve. So full-time or part-time, if you want to join the Army, we've probably got a job for you. And we recruit across the entire spectrum, right? So students that are just starting their healthcare journey or their chaplain journey all the way to fully board-certified physicians who maybe have been practicing for a while and are just looking for a change of pace, we've got a job for all of you.
Make sure you guys visit those websites that we spoke about and look at those positions, because I'm sure there is something out there for you all. Now, if someone has been in practice for years and they're looking to put their skills to use for caring for our soldiers, their family members, and retirees, is there a place in the Army for them as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that last group that I mentioned, those board certified physicians. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're just starting out in your practice or you've been in your practice for a while. I think when we look at the physicians that we bring onto our team, it's usually because they're looking for some kind of change of pace in the environment. They're, you know, whether they're serving in the reserve, so they get to stay with their practice full time and just part time serve in the Army for some other opportunities, something new and different. They have always figured they wanted to serve, but didn't think they qualified for service. We can qualify folks with service. We do have waivers, and we do waive the age waivers fairly often. You know, as long as you're healthy and you can join the Army and be part of our team. But I would say that, you know, oftentimes people will decide to join us after they already have a career in medicine, because again, they're looking for that new opportunity. So, you know, maybe they always wanted to serve, maybe they always wanted to be a flight surgeon, and now is their opportunity to do that. Or perhaps they're looking for ways to advance and be in a leadership role that they didn't have the opportunity in their current health system to do, you know. So you want to be a department chief and you just didn't have that pathway, come on, join the Army. We'll put you in charge of a clinic. We'll start you small and ramp you up, but chances are good that you could have some of that leadership opportunity, research, you know, all of those types of things. We can look to see if there's an opportunity for you in the Army, but yes, we do. We bring on, I think, about 10 fully board certified physicians per year onto the regular Army side. We have a much higher mission than that, so we have room for more if we're able to connect with those folks. And then on the Army Reserve side, I think we put in about 40 to 50 per year.
That reminds me of Colonel Reiser. He was an individual that I was able to interview out at Global Medic. He joined the Army, or commissioned into the Army, or joined the Army back in 2001 after he was riding past after the towers had fell. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, and so he wanted to put his what he did to use with the in the Army. So that kind of reminded me of that, when you are bringing in those individuals who have been in their practice for a while, but they want to also serve the country. So that's definitely great. Mm-hmm. When the day is over, the uniform comes off, and you're at home with family.
Yeah.
What hobbies and interests outside of serving your country do you like to do?
Yeah, this is my favorite question. So I think this is another misperception, right? And I did some recruiting events previously where I was not able to – I was asked questions, weird questions, like, did they make you eat bugs? And can you have a pet? And, you know, so there's so many misperceptions out there. But at the end of the day, you know, right now I'm living in Kentucky. I got a small little backyard garden and some chickens. And so I love to sit on my porch and watch my chickens. And I'm a big scrapbooker, so I like to do crafting, get my fingers dirty in ink just about any time I get the chance to. Right now I have a teenage daughter, so, you know, my second job is trying to learn how to talk to her and get her to talk to me. But I, you know, love her to death, so sometimes we go to movies. She's into collecting vinyl records, which who knew those were going to come back, right?
Yeah,
but so we hit the record shop sometimes. And then I'm a binge TV watcher as well too. So on the weekends we'll pick a new show and binge watch on Netflix.
Well, Colonel Walters, thank you for taking your time out of your busy day to come in and talk to us here at the AMED Effect. Before we get out of here, is there anything else that you would like to say, or any message that you would like to leave to anybody who is listening or watching this podcast?
Yeah, just my final words. I wouldn't be doing my job as a recruiter if I didn't say it. You know, if you have any desire or interest to just talk to somebody in your specialty or that's on a similar journey or path as you, reach out to us via the websites. We'll get you connected to a recruiter and a subject matter expert that's doing what you want to do in the Army. And let's just have a conversation.
Again, thank you for your time. This is the AMED Effect. Make sure you guys go back, you listen to all of the other episodes, and be on the lookout for this episode with Colonel Walters. Thank you, and you all have a good day. The causes and effects of Army medical opportunities are endless. When you join the U.S. Army Medical Department, not only will you get more out of your medical career, but you will also provide meaningful service to soldiers, their families, military retirees, and last but not least, your country. To learn more about AMED, visit goarmy.com/AMED. That's goarmy.com /AMED. And if you're looking for information on tuition assistance, visit goarmy.com/HPSP. That's goarmy.com/HPSP.